Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sitter.
And I'm Jamie Bologna. We're going to hear from Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang in just a little bit from New Hampshire, but he's not alone up there.
That's right. It's getting crowded. There is at least 10 Democratic candidates with events in the Granite State over the next few days, and President Donald Trump himself was in Manchester, New Hampshire last night making his case for re-election.
See, the bottom line is, I know you like me, and this room is a love fest, I know that, but you have no choice but to vote for me. Because your 401ks, down the tubes, everything's going to be down the tubes. So whether you love me or hate me, you got to vote for me.
All right. So there it is. Just cast your ballots now.
Wow.
We're going to jump right back to our week in review. We're here with Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute. Thanks for being here, Jim.
Good to be with you.
And still with us in Studio 3 is Tito Jackson, CEO of Verdant Medical and former Boston City Councilor.
You're on thin ice, all right? Thin ice. And listeners, you can join us as well. What are the issues you're watching in the 2020 race, and what's going to help you make your decision and cast your ballot? You can call us 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. So we just heard from the president. Let's start there. He was in New Hampshire for the first time in over a year. New Hampshire's a state he barely lost to Hillary Clinton in 2016, I believe 0.3% of the vote. Anything stick out to you from the rally last night?
Throwing out your own own folks and body shaming people. And so one of the things I think that obviously happens at Trump rallies, it's an extension of entertainment, right? So, and this case around this 401k quote, it's really interesting because only 32% of people in the United States actually have a 401k. And when it comes to thinking about him and the economy, I get a little angina when thinking about, and particularly this week, what the economy has actually looked like. So for many, they've said he should just be hammering home this issue of the economy. But when we look at what he's done on the foreign front with China, as well as what he's doing domestically, I think we are definitely in a space where Democratic folks like Elizabeth Warren, who's she's been getting her groove on, in the past week or so, I believe we have to really think about this race really from the 40% on the right, 40% on the left, and that 20% in the middle, and thinking about Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, and Michigan, and how that's going to play. And lastly, the blatantly racist talk and just racist speak of Donald Trump is, I believe, going to really turn off that middle 20%.
Well, so actually, Councilor Jackson and Jim Sturgis from the Pioneer Institute, stand by because we actually have a presidential candidate on the line here. Former tech executive Andrew Yang is campaigning in New Hampshire this weekend, and he joins us now from Concord. Hello, Andrew Yang.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and listeners, if you have a question for candidate Andrew Yang, what do you think of his central policy proposal to give every American $1,000 a month? Who pays for it? What would you do with an extra $1,000? Is it realistic? You can call us 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So, Andrew Yang, let's start there. This is, I think you would agree, your signature policy proposal. You call it the Freedom Dividend. You'd give $1,000 a month to every American citizen over the age of 18. Why have you made that the center of your campaign?
When I look to see how Donald Trump won the election of 2016, the driving force was that we'd automated away 4 million manufacturing jobs in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Iowa, all the swing states needed to win. And unfortunately, now we're going to do the same thing to millions of retail jobs, call center jobs, fast food jobs, and most disastrously, truck driving jobs in the months to come. We're in the midst of the greatest economic transformation in the history of our country, the fourth industrial revolution, and our politicians don't seem to understand what we need to do. So that's why I'm championing this freedom dividend of $1,000 a month for every American that would help us all more effectively transition in the midst of the greatest economic transformation in our country's history.
Andrew Yang, are you pessimistic about the future of America that kind of doesn't really sound like a very optimistic, bright future that you're describing.
Well, I'm very optimistic if we start sharing the bounty of the 21st century economy with ourselves. If you look up, Amazon's a trillion-dollar tech company that paid zero in taxes last year, and that's not unusual. While they're closing 30% of our stores and malls and sucking up $20 billion in business every year out of our communities. So we can experience a very optimistic shared future if we get our act together and wake up to the reality of the economy in 2019, that we need to be able to share in the benefits of this innovation instead of having it be hoarded by a very small number of firms and individuals.
So I know that you've said to pay for this, basically part of the plan would be to consolidate government welfare programs, and folks who are receiving benefits can make a choice. Do they want the $1,000 a month, or do they want the benefits they're receiving? There's been some pushback to your plan. For example, Milton Ezrati, a Wall Street veteran, wrote in Forbes recently that consolidating welfare services might be a way to pay for it, but that using this as a substitute for Social Security or Medicare would basically be like transferring money from the older population to the younger population. Went on to say that if you do the same thing with disability insurance, that you're transferring money from the disabled to the able-bodied. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, it fundamentally misunderstands my proposal, because I would not touch Social Security or Medicare. And I was just talking to someone who champions people who are suffering from disabilities, and they said flat out that many people on disabilities would love to be able to work 10, 15, 20 hours a week, but they're not able to do so because after they get disability, if they show up to be healthy for work even 1 hour, then they'll lose all of their benefits. So this is a dramatic step forward for tens of millions of Americans. And anyone listening to this right now, imagine what you would do with $1,000 a month. We're the richest, most advanced economy in the history of the world. We can easily afford this. And if you don't believe me, do you remember voting for the $4 trillion bailout of Wall Street banks? Do you remember anyone caterwauling about where the money's coming from? I don't, because none of us voted for it. This is what we need to do for our people. Instead of bailing out the banks, we need to start attending to the needs of our people in the time, again, of the greatest economic transformation in history.
1-800-423-8255 is the phone number. 1-800-423-TALK if you have a question for presidential candidate Andrew Yang. Josh is calling from Foxborough. You're next on Radio Boston. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to ask a question about the universal basic income. Big supporter of Andrew Yang. My question is, if everybody has an extra $1,000 a month in our capitalist society, isn't everything just going to go up to adjust for the extra money that everybody has in their pocket, you know, inflation?
Yeah, Andrew Yang?
Thank you so much for the support and the question. So if you dig into what's happening in our economy right now, there are three sources of inflation that are driving Americans crazy: housing, education, and healthcare. If you look at just about every other vertical, you see that prices are actually stable, in some cases even going down, or quality is getting better. I'm talking about clothes, electronics, media, automobiles.
So I want to jump
it's
in.
All getting much more expensive.
I think we lost
and
you
those,
for a sec there.
Particular markets, yeah, those particular markets aren't functioning properly for a variety of reasons. Housing, because there are certain markets like Boston, unfortunately, where everyone feels that they have to live close to work in order to make the kind of living that they want. New developments.
I think we're having a little bit of trouble with your phone line there.
Yeah,
Chris, you had
I do want to follow up on that, Andrew.
From New Hampshire. But the explanation is that money in our hands does not cause inflation. And again, we printed $4 trillion for the banks, and there was virtually no inflation in any consumer market. There's still going to be price competitiveness and cost sensitivity. If you imagine the local restaurant, if they jack their prices up from $10 to $15, you would have a real problem with that. Even if you have an extra $1,000 a month, it's not like you'll just say, oh, it's $15 now. So competition will keep most every vertical pretty much in step, and the money will go towards addressing the sources of inflation that do exist in our economy, which tend to be housing, education, and healthcare.
So I know you've said that a big part of this plan, or part of the motivation for this plan, is the coming threat of automation. You mentioned its role potentially in the 2016 election. There's been some dispute of how much that actually affected people's votes in 2016. But what to you says that this is different from past innovation? Our technology has changed in the past. We renovated production through factories and automated a lot of those processes. And we didn't see a huge drop in jobs. They just sort of transferred and took some of the tougher, more menial tasks off the table and open up the chance for people to do jobs that might potentially have more impact on communities or something like that. So what do you say to folks who say you're overselling this threat of automation, that our economy has kind of naturally handled this sort of innovation in the past?
First, if you look at the voting district data, you'll see there's a direct correlation between the adoption of industrial robots in that voting area and the movement towards Donald Trump. None of this is speculative. It's one of the highest correlations you can find in the voter district data. Second, comparing what we're going through now to what we went through over 100 years ago is irresponsible. If you look at MIT, McKinsey, the Obama White House, everyone predicts that between 20 to 30%, even 40% of American jobs will be subject to automation in the next 20 years. That's 2 to 3 times the rate of the last industrial revolution, which included violence, protests, and the implementation of universal high school in 1911. So if MIT and McKinsey and the Obama White House all agree, then I think it's time we wake up. Elon Musk, everyone looking at this, the more you know, the more concerned you get.
All right. I guess I'm wondering, there have been some critics that have said if what you're stating is true, that we would see a substantial drop in the employment rate. And in fact, it's gone the other way after those 4 million jobs you're talking about from 2016. So what's your response to those criticisms?
The headline unemployment rate does not include people dropping out of the workforce. Right now, our labor force participation rate is 63%, a multi-decade low in the same levels as Costa Rica and El Salvador. The reason for the drop is that many people left the workforce, particularly unskilled men, which is 100% consistent with what you would expect if you were automating away a large number of those jobs.
1-800-423-8255 is the phone number. Let's take a couple of calls here. Charles is calling from Newfield, New Hampshire. Charles, you're on Radio Boston.
Hi. Thank you so much. So, Andrew, I'm wondering from the behavioral economics side, if people have an extra $1,000 a month, will they work less and then kind of be back where they started?
Andrew Yang?
When people receive cash grants, new mothers who spent more time with their kids and teenagers who spent more time in school and graduated at higher levels. For just about everyone else, work levels remained about the same. And that's what you would see throughout our society. I've been giving $1,000 a month to several families throughout the country, and you're not seeing any reduction in work among them. If you think about your own life, if you started getting $1,000 a month, you might even work harder, because then you'll have a leg up and be able to get ahead instead of always scrambling just to survive, possibly even working 2 or 3 jobs, which unfortunately is what many Americans are stuck doing right now.
Andrew Yang, I want to know what your plan is for cell phone reception in New Hampshire. Robert is calling from Providence. Robert, you're on Radio Boston. Well, no. Also in Providence. How about Madeline is calling from Brockton. Madeline, you're on Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. Just a couple of points. Even in this show right now, we've talked about rampant drug usage and the fact that only 32% of Americans have 401k plans. And while Andrew's message may initially sound pessimistic, I think he's the only candidate that's putting forward optimistic solutions, getting away from the culture wars and really getting to the root of some of the suffering and the problems that people are experiencing, which are venting themselves out in, you know, very outrageous ways. And I think we can get back to what Andrew calls a humanistic capital. Big supporter here, Andrew. Go for it.
Thanks for the call, Madeline. It sounds like you've got her vote already, Andrew. I do want to ask you about some recent comments you made about the president. You called him, I believe, a fat slob. I'm just curious, do you worry at all that, you know, I'm struck by the Michelle Obama line, when they go low, we go high. Do you worry about going to that level of kind of personal attacks?
Well, if you actually look at the comments that they're clearly me poking fun at the president in a lighthearted way and in jest. I was in Iowa and was asked about eating a turkey leg, and then it became a conversation about the president running a mile. We need to solve the problems that got Donald Trump elected in the first place. That's certainly where my focus is, and that's where all Democrats should be focusing to, as Madeline said, actually solve the problems on the ground. We have a retirement savings crisis. We have an opiate crisis because many people don't feel like they have a path forward. We need to start solving the problems that got Donald Trump elected.
I'd like to shift gears, if we could, just briefly, and talk about guns in America. This has been an ongoing conversation, and I just wonder, Andrew Yang, if you could outline a bit, what is your plan to both promote perhaps gun safety and also keep children and young people, folks going to Walmart or club goers in Dayton, Ohio, safe?
I'm aligned with the other Democratic candidates that we need common sense gun safety laws in this country. We need to make it harder for people to get their hands on firearms that can kill large numbers of civilians very, very quickly. But we also have to start thinking about the bigger chain of events that lead to these last two tragic steps, which is buying the gun and then using it. I'm talking about making so that kids are growing up in environments that have less trauma and stress. I'm talking about making our schools more accepting, where it's not that if you show up and you don't fit in that you wind up being bullied and feel like you're marginalized at your own school. I'm talking about a culture that accepts that many of us have mental health struggles and destigmatizes those struggles so that more people can get the kind of help that they need. We have to attack gun violence at every link in the chain. The reality is that there are over 300 million firearms already in this country, and that passing effective gun laws still will not reduce that supply. So we need to have a perpetual gun buyback in effect, that any gun owner can sell their gun at cost anytime they want and try and reduce the supply. We also need to personalize the firearms where only the user can fire them, and that's something that many gun owners would embrace because many of them are parents as well.
So, Andrew, I know you've only got a couple more minutes with us. I want to make sure you get a chance to talk to another caller or two. Matthew in Watertown, you're on with Andrew Yang. Matthew.
Hi, Andrew. Really nice to have a chance to talk to you. I'm a Yang Gang guy all the way through, but I have a question for you. So how are you going to be more visible on the stage? How are you going to highlight yourself more? We love you, but we see that you're being kind of squished on the stage. How are you going to look at other candidates, tell them the honesty, be more aggressive, tell them that for the most part, you're kind of, they're all kind of like phonies in comparison to you. So tell us, what is your plan? How can we stick with you? How can we help you?
All right. Thanks for the call, Matthew. Obviously, Matthew's a big fan of yours, Andrew. But I am curious, this is a crowded field. How do you make sure your message stands out?
Well, the field is about to shrink a lot. Thank you, Matthew, for the support. And I'm one of only 9 candidates that's qualified for the fall debates. And the odds are that I might get twice as much airtime simply because there have as many candidates on the stage. We've been succeeding.
You like to bring the math to the conversation, don't you?
Yeah. In a Fox poll, I was tied for 5th. So the message is working. We can present a positive vision to the rest of the country, and they can see for themselves the difference between me and the other candidates. The goal is to keep introducing myself to the American people, and I have both September and October on the debate stage to do just that.
All right, that's presidential candidate and businessman Andrew Yang joining us from New Hampshire. Andrew Yang, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, guys. So much Yang Gang love in Boston. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us. Still with us in studio is Jim Sturgis of the Pioneer Institute and former city councilor Tito Jackson. Stay with us. We're going to come back to you after a quick break. I'm Jamie Bologna.
And I'm Chris Sitterick. This is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sitterick.
And I'm Jamie Bologna. And still with us in Studio 3 for this marathon week in review session is Tito Jackson, CEO of Verdant Medical and former Boston City Councilor, and Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute.
All right. So right before the break, we spoke with presidential candidate Andrew Yang. What jumped out to you guys?
Five things. Five things.
Wow.
Yeah, no.
Pick two really quickly.
I think it was really interesting you did not speak about education. For me, that's the great equalizer across generations. I thought that was really interesting, and especially when he started talking about those areas of the economy that were highly inflated, he included education. Education has, I think, by anyone's analysis, higher education in particular, been affected by how much funding there is in from the federal government, et cetera, et cetera. So I think he's missing something there. I would also say that he's saying that the rest of the economy is showing that there's not much inflation there. That is also driven by the Amazons, the Walmarts, and all those other people that are eating some of the smaller business that we all love so much. So there's some contradiction in there.
Of course, part of his argument is that if you have $1,000 extra a month, maybe you could start a business or something.
Try and start a business with $1,000. Yep, thank you. Some of the stuff, he's a math guy, and I wonder about his ability to get his message out there when he talks about correlations, and he starts citing, you know, labor participation rates. By the way, he got that one, I think, a little bit wrong. We're an aging society. That's a large piece of why the Obama administration did a report on this. They think they said 65% of the labor participation rate decline is because we're getting older. I was interested in how flexible he is. And I'll end with this one, the third one, which is this is an idea that Milton Friedman had in the 1950s. This is a guy who's not very ideological, I get, in terms of what he's his approach. He approaches as a business guy and he wants to solve problems, and that's actually pretty refreshing.
Yeah, he's been classified as a fringe candidate, but as you mentioned, he has qualified for the debate stage. Tito, what do you make of
this? And he's a successful business guy.
I don't know what you're
talking about. And I don't know how many – we should ask him how many bankruptcies he's had, but to date, I don't know of one. I actually think I didn't know a lot about him. I think he's a very likable candidate. I think he is addressing many of the issues and pain points that Americans have across the country. And I am very happy that this go-round that the Democratic Party hasn't gotten in its own way. And unlike the last go-round, artificially cut itself off from all of the talent that is there. It is a great thing that in the United States of America, someone like Andrew Yang can actually get the type of traction that he's getting. And I believe he's adding a great deal to the conversation.
What do you guys think of his answer to the question about calling the president what he called him? You know, sort of going into the mud with the president in this campaign.
I'll take that one. I'm a free speech guy. People say what they want to do, and we go in and out with this sort of thing, and it's not nice, and people will pay a price for it. If it's over the top, I think you'll pay a price. I actually think the president, this is one of the things that we were talking about before. You were talking about the president, his rhetoric before, and suburban women are very turned off by the president right now. He was 0.3% behind in New Hampshire. He's going to be a lot more behind, and I think that's why some of his talking points are related to, you may like me and may not like me. He knows people don't like him, and that's a number that may not budge. But that's the price you pay for that kind of rhetoric. And, of course, the president's gone well beyond that.
And he needs that 53% of white women to win. And I think calling folks' names, and I believe he's broken the mold and has called folks' names, but also blatant racism in ways that in my lifetime, people who are in the political space have not actually spoken generally in that way. Now, mind you, their actions have been very correlated with issues of race and institutional racism. But when it comes down to the way in which he's been speaking, I think that's a huge issue. He might need to get on the Stairmaster a little bit and lay off the McDonald's.
All right, I'm not touching that one. Obviously, we got a ways to go.
I've been going to the gym, so I can actually speak about that a little bit.
Doing the Michelle Obama.
Very deftly delivered. He may.
We'll obviously have a lot of time to discuss that as we approach Iowa and New Hampshire in February. I do want to make sure we leave some time today for our hubbubs, those brief stories or events that caught our attention this week. Jim, let's start with you.
So mine is about Shaw's on Hyde Park Ave. They had several mouse cakes this week on sale. This is a very infrequent thing. We don't see it very often. Universal Hub reported this first. That's where I go to get all my hubbubs. Best hubbubs.
It has the word hub
in the
it.
Name. Right?
It does have a hub in it. So they're yellow. So we know it's not a misspelling. It's not a chocolate mousse cake. It's yellow, but it's not cheesecake, but there are mice on it. It's spelling the Tom and Jerry notion that mice love cheese. So the question is why Shaw's would do such a silly thing. But the biggest question of all is who the heck buys these things?
All right.
I don't know. I might buy a mouse cake. Okay. Counselor Jackson.
Mine has nothing to do with food. Like I said, I'm trying to trim down a little bit, so I'm going to actually stay away from that. Mine was an event that I went to last night at WeWork, and it was called the Urban Millennial and Fashion Trends and Data. It was put on by a gentleman named Winston Henderson, who runs an organization called Sankofa. And it was an amazing conversation about the future of the city of Boston, how entrepreneurs in the fashion space can actually step forward and lead. And in particular, urban millennials, people of color, who are actually the majority of people in the city of Boston, can actually have their mark and make their mark in the city of Boston in fashion. And so it was an amazing conversation. I have some of it. This is my plug. You can check it out at my Twitter, at Tito Jackson, and then also at my Facebook. But it was an amazing, amazing event. And that room has to exist in the city of Boston, and it's not one that typically exists.
All right. I feel a little bad doing this now, but my hubbub is actually a bit of a moment of personal indulgence. Today is my son Evan's fourth birthday.
Happy birthday,
happy
Evan.
Birthday, Evan.
He really
happy
wanted
birthday,
to say happy
Evan.
Birthday on the radio, so that's happy birthday, up. Evan. I'm so excited to come home and celebrate with him.
He got four happy birthdays.
I know. System. Pretty great.
Well, mine is not that sweet, and it doesn't involve cake, but it does involve street signs. Have you heard about this? The Old Town Road signs in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Of course, that's the name of the Lil Nas X mega hit. The town is down six signs. They're stop replacing them until the song is off of the Billboard charts, but it's still at number one. I did call the company that makes the signs for Wellesley, and you can get your own personal sign for $85.
There you go. What a deal.
That's Tito how Jackson. You pay for schools. Yeah. Revenue right there. That's what I'm talking about.
Tito Jackson is a former city councilor and now the CEO of Verdant Medical. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute. Thanks to you as well.
Have a good weekend.
That's our show for today. Radio But Up Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Chris Sitter.
And I'm Jamie Bologna. This is Radio Boston.